Hello and welcome to the Investors Chronicle Companies and Markets Show. I am John Heumann, editor of the Investors Chronicle. I'm joined today by Kate Bioli, who's one of our personal finance and funds team. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm fine, thanks, John.
Good, and you've written a cover feature this week. You're going to talk to us about that in a minute. It's about technology, which is very, very interesting, and how you can get into some of the newer companies who are out there. Stephen Wilmot, companies editor. How are you doing, Stephen?
Well, apart from the broken clavicle, Indeed, just fine.
Back from your holidays, which were curtailed somewhat, the activities by your injury.
Indeed.
We'll talk about that in a minute, because bizarrely, you've managed to relate it to your taking stock column this week somehow. Let's come on to that in a minute. And over the control room, we've got Graham Davis, who's our digital editor. You've done news this week, haven't you, Graham?
Good.
And Tom's on the control. How are you doing, Dom?
I'm doing okay.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Just okay.
Okay, so let's start. I mean, it's results hell at the moment. We've had 20 odd pages this week, 60 company results. It gets even worse next week, doesn't it, Stephen?
About 90. Today is the day that every company seems to have chosen to post their half-year results at the end of June before everyone goes on holiday in August.
So. Yeah. It feels like it gets more compressed every year into an even shorter space of time in the middle of summer. Is it just my mind playing tricks on me?
I actually think it's more compressed than it was last year, almost certainly, because it tails off next week. But readers will probably find that one company, at least in their portfolio, has reported over the past 3 days, definitely. 30 results today, about 25 yesterday, and similar on Tuesday. So
everyone is working very, very hard.
So we are, yeah, absolutely, doing what only we can do, producing reports on every result that comes out.
Okay, wonderful, good stuff. Graham, let's start with the news. 7 days.
Yeah.
What are the big stories this week?
I was on holiday on Monday, but started off with a bit of a shakeout in the markets. The Chinese market plunged.
Oh yes.
On Monday, I think about 80% in the day. It's funny because China had been settled for a couple of weeks since the government stepped in and basically fixed the market a couple of weeks ago, and basically by not allowing anyone to sell shares for
I was going to say, when you say
period,
fixed, did you mean repaired or fixed as in terms of a fix?
Well, I wouldn't like to. Basically, they fixed the market. But they stopped people. Yeah, they stopped people selling shares. Lots of companies got suspended. And it appears as though maybe, I don't know what happened on Monday, but maybe the government sort of took their eye off the ball for a second and everyone pounced in and sold what they could. And then the government stepped in again and.
But started buying banking shares.
Started buying shares and shoring up the market.
Yeah.
And it sort of calmed down a bit over there. And then focus in the last couple of days has been on US Federal Open Markets Committee and hinting at interest rates rises again. We've been here before.
Yep, we have. We spoke about it a couple of weeks ago.
Indeed, but we've had good GDP growth figures from the UK and the US. The US had just come out this morning. Last quarter has been strong in both UK and US economies. That gives further sort of credence to the theory that interest rate rises are coming.
Okay. So China, we won't talk about that. We did talk about that in some detail last week. You're going to talk about that on your personal finance podcast this week, aren't you? Because you've looked at that.
Yeah, I mean, we've looked at it in relation to ETFs before, and now we're looking at it in relation to funds and, you know, whether people should be worried about it really affecting funds.
Yeah, because you spoke to Fidelity China Special Situations this week.
Who invest in A shares, which is quite rare for funds. So I think probably feeling the pain a bit more than some other ones, which invest more in Hong Kong.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we looked at its share price when this was all kicking off, and it was kind of tracking the ups
Fidelity
and downs.
Fidelity Fund was getting hit, indeed.
And we know it's very popular with UK investors, so
yeah.
Let's not talk about that anymore, because we don't want to steal the thunder of the personal finance podcast, which you record tomorrow. Okay, GDP figures, what's behind the strength here? 0.7%, wasn't it? Which was an acceleration from 0.4% in the first quarter.
That's correct. Very, very strong. And, you know, once again, sort of fueled by consumer spending and
housing
credit is rising and, house prices are rising. And we've been here before.
Yeah.
We have been here before. The rebalancing of the economy has not happened in the past 5 years that the government has talked about at every possible opportunity. It hasn't. I mean, in the latest quarter, although the GDP growth was up 0.7%, the manufacturing sector actually shrank.
No surprise.
I mean, it's not been helped by the strong pound. the manufacturing sector, exports will get hit.
And the euro crisis.
And the European crisis, of course, is they're a big trading partner.
Yeah.
But it just feels as though this sort of recovery is built on the same sand that other recoveries have been built upon.
Yeah, I mean, before we come on to our results discussion proper, I mean, you mentioned, you allude to the property sector in the 7 days section here, because there's been some results from housing-related companies. We've got Taylor Wimpey, Rightmove, Foxtons, all pretty strong.
Yeah.
Countrywide was a bit weaker this morning, interestingly. But
they're not very good, are they? They once did my conveyancing, and I will never forget that. But no, Foxtons was a bit of a surprise, because I mean, they've had a bit of a torrid time over the last year, as sort of London prices have not necessarily softened, but the growth has slowed. But they bounced back quite strongly, it seems.
Yeah, and it looks like London's picking up again now, isn't it, post-election?
Yeah. Yeah, Rightmove again. There were some worries about the on-the-market entry. The sort of estate agent-backed portal seems to not be anything to worry about at all there, really.
Well, Zoopla's the one that's taken the hit from that as a number two player.
I prefer Zoopla. There you go. But anyway, that's it. I use Rightmove more.
You're in the select minority.
It looks like Rightmove has actually been strengthened by on the market, because it's competition or taking business off each other, and Rightmove just becomes ever more established.
There you go.
110 million visitors per month to their website in the first half.
I'm not surprised. I sold my house. I've moved already, and I still go back to it. Why?
Can't help it, John.
I know. Property porn, I think they call it. But, there you go.
It's one of the top 10 most, I think maybe even... maybe seventh or eighth most popular site in the UK, which is extraordinary.
I set up a load of alerts to try and find a house, and I forgot to turn them off. So maybe that's why I keep going back to it. Okay, Royal Mail had a bit of bother, I noticed.
Yes, Royal Mail, Ofcom has come out and said that Royal Mail's pricing of its bulk delivery, which is what it charges to the other mail companies, was unlawful.
Okay.
And stifling competition. I mean, Whistle, which was the Dutch-backed last-mile delivery company, they went bust a short while ago. And basically, I think that the suspicion here, which appears to have been confirmed by Ofcom, is that Royal Mail was charging too much.
Yes, yeah,
Royal Mail denies this, but I mean, this is a problem Royal Mail has. We've pointed it out before, and we had it on a sale for a long time.
Yeah, and proved quite a good, we've moved good call
it to
that one.
We've moved it to a hold now. Yeah. But this universal pledge to deliver to every street in the country will hurt them eventually, because you know the other guys will cherry pick.
Yeah, and commodities had a bit of a horrible week. Gold, in particular, plumbing depths it hasn't seen for quite some time. You're going to talk about that on the PF podcast.
Not me specifically, I hope.
Not you specifically.
yes, we are.
But I mean, we had a few results from miners and some of the oil explorers as well.
BP is the big one in these. The set of results we had, Shell, of course, this morning.
And they're all getting hurt by the falling oil price.
It's pretty predictable, yeah. Their exploration business is really in very poor shape, but somewhat offset by their refining businesses, which are doing okay. But you know, Shell announced 6,000 job cuts this morning, so that kind of says it all, really.
Yeah, that'll be in next week's mag.
That'll be in next week's mag, yes.
And funny enough, Centrica announced 6,000 job cuts as well this morning.
Yeah, about 6,500.
That's,
I think,
round numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
But what's that all about?
The Centrica job losses are in its exploration and production upstream division as well.
I think people often forget that Centrica is more than British Gas, but it might not be in future.
Yeah, yeah.
They're refocusing on the consumer end of things.
Well, that was very profitable in the last half year, from what I understand, listening to the radio very quickly this morning. But they're pushing through some price cuts.
It was profitable because they only did their price cuts in the second half of last year. So,
And what its chief exec was saying was that it might sort of balance itself out before the year is out. And obviously, the biggest story of the week is takeovers, and it's what I wrote my editorial on, UK for sale. It seems that every time you look at the market news, there's another company falling to an overseas predator. I mean, today we had Hellermann Titan went to Delphi, big American automotive components company, big premium there, was it?
Yeah, no, they're really big premium. The offer came in this morning, 44.5% higher than Hellermann Titan closed at last night. So really, you know, don't know the company terribly well myself, but it has the feel of a knockout bid.
Does sound like it. And
there's a tip of ours, which we should flag.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. That's nice too. And I looked down the list of takeovers that we publish in the magazine each week. And you've got Wrexham, which is being taken out by a big American company. You've got Telecity, which is being taken out by an American data center provider, indeed. I think.
Quintain this week.
Another tip. Well. So Quintain owns, it's a property developer. Wembley.
Yeah, all the development around Wembley Stadium. And it's got an offer from Lone Star, which is a private equity company. I think it was involved in the UK property market in its sort of doldrums, it made a name for itself kind of buying up assets on the cheap when a couple of years ago when things weren't looking so rosy.
Well, things aren't cheap now, are they? Quintain
is...
It's never seemed to fulfil its potential.
Well, precisely, exactly. And I think, you know, investors in this one are long suffering. I mean, having said that, our tip's done very well. But
of course.
But we tipped them at 100p about a year ago, and they're now, well, the offer is at 131p. And interestingly, the share price, at least when we went to press, was 132p, suggesting that people are expecting a better offer. And this approach from Lone Star does have the feel of an opportunistic approach to it. They're taking advantage of the fact that Quintain, although it's had a new management team and it's had a bit of a turnaround, has long been seen as a bit of a dog in the property sector.
Yeah. I mean, this is Wembley development. I spoke to them when I covered property in 2004 or 2005, I think it was. It was a very long time ago, it seems. And, you know, the Wembley plans were all going ahead then, and it seems to have gone very slowly.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously there was a financial crisis in between, but yeah, they were underfunded for a long time, so they could hardly do anything. I mean, it's a vast master plan, and these things are very time consuming. But
yeah, I hear they're going to build a shopping village there. Like a Bicester.
They have built a shopping village. That is the thing that they have done.
Okay, they're going to expand it. So that's what we need more of: shops. Keep the economy going.
It's a consumer-led recovery, John.
Absolutely.
It's all about leisure and restaurants this time.
But. Yeah. So these American beers, and this is what you've written about in Taking Stock.
You're
out in Washington.
I was out in Washington.
Where you befell your terrible accident on a bicycle or a tandem, in fact.
Indeed. Yes, let's gloss over that. But one of the reasons for this accident, I should say, is that the roads are in a fairly parlous state in Washington, D.C.
Nothing to do with you not putting the front wheel on properly, then.
As I say, let's gloss over that. And so I was very curious to read in the Wall Street Journal that there's a deal going through Congress, possibly between Democrats who want more improvements to roads and Republicans who want tax cuts. And so there seems to be some kind of bipartisan agreement for a move to basically allow companies, all these US multinationals with massive cash piles we hear about, to repatriate some of that cash at a much lower tax rate, so maybe 5-6%, that kind of thing, rather than the, you know, nearly 40% rate of tax that companies usually face on their international earnings. And let's not forget that the US taxes global earnings, unlike Britain or most countries, which only tax earnings made in the country. I mean, I guess the point I'm making in Taking Stock is that actually won't really affect the tax reasons why US companies have been making approaches for UK and European companies over the past couple of years. Like these so-called tax inversions that shot to prominence with AstraZeneca and Pfizer last year. Barack Obama tried to clamp down on them with some rules last autumn, and there was a bit of a lull, and AbbVie called off its bid for Shire, which looked like it was going to go ahead for a while. But actually, they've kind of crept up again, and we've got Monsanto bidding for Syngenta, which is another ICT, or former ICT, actually. We took it to hold in light of the massive escalation in the share price because of this approach. Anyway, Monsanto's obviously seen an opportunity to get a good European asset sort of reasonably on the cheap, which is another reason why we've had this wave of takeover approaches.
So lots of assets that offer exposure value to a recovery that perhaps doesn't exist in the US anymore. Lots of cash that they can't get.
Lots of cash, very expensive share prices, which they can use. I think most of these approaches are cash approaches, but still, you know, they've got US shares, as we all know, trade at quite high multiples, so they can use that those expensive valuations to make approaches for European companies.
So potentially lots more of these to come then.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, Hellam & Titan wasn't the only one today. We had Chime Communications.
Yeah. That's the UK.
Which is a UK led approach, WPP. But
WPP is in bed with a Providence equity on that one, who I believe are American.
Okay.
I'm not sure how.
And obviously, WPP has a big US business.
That's very true.
So
exactly. That's very
but
true.
It hasn't all been one way, though. You know, GKN announced a deal to buy Fokker this week.
German aerospace?
European aerospace.
Fokker used to make aeroplanes.
Yeah.
Sure they did.
Yeah, this is aeroplane parts. And Hikma Pharmaceuticals, which is not actually a UK company, but that is buying Boehringer Ingelheim's generics business in the US in a deal worth about.
Yeah, I guess the wider point is that money is cheap.
Yeah, there's deals are flying around, and the flow is a lot incoming, but there are deals as well.
There's obviously one big deal that we're right in the middle of as well, which we write about in the new spotlight this week. Pearson,
indeed,
selling us. Mm-hmm. To Nikkei of Japan.
And Melrose Industries did a very good deal this week. They sold Elster, which is a company they bought 3 years ago, to Honeywell in the US for a huge uplift in value.
For more than their market cap, is it not? Mm.
Yeah, and there's going to be a big return of cash to shareholders. And Melrose have done, the management team there has got a cracking record, and they've just enhanced it even further this week.
But it's what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Buy companies that are essentially recovery plays, turn them around, sell them on.
Yeah. Mm.
Brilliant. If you can do it, which they obviously can.
And it's nice to see a company not minding shrinking. I mean, it used to be, let's not forget, Melrose was in the FTSE 100 for a bit, but then it sold a company, returned the cash, and went back to being a much smaller company, and it's done it again. And it's nice when the management don't let their kind of FTSE 100 aspirations get in the way of a sensible business deal.
No, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, talking of companies that are awash with cash, I mean, Apple is one company that has enormous, enormous pots of cash that are sitting overseas.
$203 billion.
Oh, it's just mind-boggling.
The third quarter count last week.
And that brings us neatly on to Kate and the cover feature technology. So we talk a lot about the Apples. I mean, you know, if you're investing in tech, you know, you immediately think of Apple.
Yeah.
Companies like that, Microsoft and Oracle and IBM and.
Yeah.
What is essentially the first wave of technology companies? And what we've talked about this week, what you've explored, is how to get into the new wave. So companies that are up and coming.
Yeah, kind of new generation of kind of exciting tech stocks that you maybe wouldn't think of as technology stocks even.
Okay, okay. And so what sort of themes are we talking about? You mentioned big data.
Yeah, it's a lot of things connected to data. So this idea of big data and this Internet of Things. So, you know, your fridge talking to your phone, talking to your heating or whatever.
Yeah.
And everything tied in with that. And then cybersecurity. And then also things like electric cars.
Okay, okay.
So, yeah, some quite kind of fun, you know, exciting, futuristic-y things.
Yeah, well, there was an amazing story this week, actually, going off on a small tangent. What is it? Fiat Chrysler had a bit of a problem with its very, very computerised cars that someone managed to actually hack one that was driving along.
Yeah.
So I guess that brings two of these themes together, electric
exactly,
cars and cyber security.
Yeah, perfect. Well, I think that's the problem with all this data, that with, you know, more of it flying around and more access to it, there's more risk of someone hacking into and misusing it, which I think is the big problem.
Yeah, yeah. So some of the largest companies are involved in this space through cloud computing and such alike. But then there's, as we say, a new wave.
Well, yeah, I think the idea is that a lot of people are saying that obviously we've got these kind of current incumbents who are massive successful companies. Some are kind of arguing that they're not at the front wave of some of the really nascent bits of this.
Yeah.
And so you've got companies like, in electric cars, companies like Tesla, for example.
Yeah.
Who are not only making electric cars and, you know, people would argue kind of maybe the first viable electric cars as cars rather than clunky, you know, things that no one's going to drive.
Yeah, yeah. What you mean, like those little pink things that you say occasionally riding around London, which I think belong to the BBC most of the time.
Yeah, so not those.
Not those.
Yeah. But then they're also moving into home storage, which is going to be the big...
Oh, batteries, power storage.
And they've just made this, I think it's called the Powerwall, which you can have in your home and charge your car from. And I mean, if they really make strides forward in that, that's going to be the big
because they're really a battery company. I mean, it's all about
getting off
power
grid
source,
and then being able to
getting the power source as small, the portable power source as small as possible.
Yeah, because I mean, that's always been the thing with electric cars, isn't it, that you can like drive to the end of your street but then it's going to break down and you're going to need to plug it in.
Yeah, and plus we don't have anywhere to plug them in
exactly.
The UK mainly. So I mean, these companies, a lot of them are, there's some in the UK.
Yeah,
but a lot of them are overseas companies.
Yeah, kind of Silicon Valley, US.
And a lot of them are private companies as well.
Yes.
And I thought there was a fascinating point you make, that a lot of these companies, because they're asset light, they can actually become much, much bigger before they even need to go public and possibly never even go public.
Well, I think that's a really interesting theme, I guess, of our time now, is that we've got so many of these companies which are enormous, like over a billion. They call them unicorns, which don't need to list because they are so capital light. And things like Uber, things like Airbnb, things which are kind of I guess, becoming household names, some of them, but yeah. are still private and you can't access, obviously.
But they are going to list, I think, yeah, those two. But they've grown quite large without having to do already.
Yeah,
but I must admit, there's one company in here that I'd never heard of, which is the best name I've seen of a company in a long time, which is Splunk.
Yeah.
It's a big data company.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think they digest big data and, you know, as a company, you could use Splunk software to...
Okay.
Yeah.
And healthcare companies are using this kind of stuff as well. Yeah. So just to analyse the vast amounts of data in drug discovery. And so, I mean, it is incredible. Mm. Okay, so how do we get into this? I mean, assuming we're not all going to, you know, head off to the NASDAQ and start piling in.
Yeah.
There are, or, you know, becoming a Silicon Valley venture capitalist. How do we get involved?
There's a few different ways. The broadest way of doing this is via a fund, so an investment trust or an open-ended fund. And they will have holdings to things like Amazon, Microsoft, but then they'll also take some kind of thematic views. So the companies I've talked about here, so Splunk, for example, some of the trusts like Allianz Technology Trust will hold that, but then also others. So you've got access to US companies there as well as some UK ones.
Yeah. The interesting thing here, I thought, was that they adjust their weighting so they're not necessarily tracking the index because Apple, for example, is so large.
Yeah, well, I think they're restricted. Some of these funds will be restricted from holding the maximum amount because it would mean they were holding kind of a fifth of investors' money in Apple.
Exactly. So I think, you know, what you've investigated is how they actually distribute their investments and how weighted they are towards some of the perhaps more exciting startups than the more mature, large tech
and then
companies.
Which is particularly the case for some of these smaller trusts, which deliberately don't invest or kind of go underweight things like Microsoft and Apple and invest in smaller kind of startups. So things like Herald Investment Trust, which actually predominantly invests in the UK, but in kind of more exciting early stage companies. But then talking about accessing the private, the unlisted market, there are quite a few funds which do that. Things like Scottish Mortgage Trust. So they kind of get in there right at the beginning. And so then, you know, as a UK investor, you could have access to a kind of exciting unlisted stock.
Yeah.
But via a fund, which is obviously slightly...
Which presumably... safer. You know, presumably they hold some quite mature
obviously blue chips it's a big
that,
mix,
that kind of thing as well. But this gives you a potential massive upside and exposure
to
really exciting stories at some point in the long term future.
Yeah, you would hope so. Yeah,
yeah,
brilliant. And it has performed very well. So
okay, no, it's fascinating, really fascinating. I'm a big fan of tech. I used to be a tech analyst.
Yeah, it's fun stuff.
It is fun stuff. Mm. And what I realise now is I know nothing about tech anymore.
It's
so fast moving. Having said that, I've read this, and I know a lot more than I did yesterday. So thank you very much, Kate. It's a great piece. Thank you. Okay, let's talk results before we wrap up because we've got quite a few to get through. Obviously, we're not going to get through them all in the next 5 or 10 minutes. Stephen, what are your picks of the results?
I mean, there are so many divergent themes. That's the thing about results season, isn't it? It's a bit hard to single things out. But one which strikes me is that we've obviously had the big consumer products groups now report. So Unilever, Diageo was today. We've had SAB Miller's Q1s, or is it threes, but anyway, yeah, not their half years or full years. You know, the thing that we're seeing there is a slowdown. Confirmation of what we've known for some time, which is that emerging markets have been slowing down, but they actually do remain the engine of growth for these companies, and actually deflation in the developed markets is really causing havoc with their growth figures. So yeah, I mean, we downgraded Unilever. We've had it on a buy for some time. I mean, it's a solid dividend stock, and it's not going to fall over. But
it's a bit pricey now.
But yeah, I mean, 22 times earnings for a company that with underlying sales growth of under 3% seems pricey. But that's very much a sign of the markets, isn't it? I mean, people are so desperate for even the most modest growth that, you know, they're happy to hold on to Unilever at 22 times earnings. It's quite interesting.
Is this not that they're interested in the dividend income more than anything else, and the blue chip nature of the of the company?
We talked
last week about this so-called bondification trend, and
right,
I guess this is part of that.
Oh, absolutely, really. Absolutely. You know, it produces a 3% dividend, and it produces underlying growth of under 2.9% it was in the first half, which was better than expectations.
But you're never going to go wrong with it.
But
you might see some fluctuation in the share price, but
exactly,
it's going to be around in, you know, for years.
Yeah, and we did vacillate over this one. Should we keep it on a buy or should we put it back to hold? And we just thought, well, no, this is a genuine hold. We've debated this in the past, haven't we, about what our hold recommendation means. But this is, you know, we think it is worth holding, but it's hardly a massively attractive entry price. And this is a theme we're seeing across a lot of the market, I think.
Yeah. I mean, on the consumer front, Fevertree. Which I thought it's a really interesting little company. It was our Goodweek candidate this week since they listed, it's flying.
It's really only gone one way. Absolutely, this is a little company. I mean, readers may recognise it from high-end gin and tonics. Yeah, exactly. It's the one that seems to be, you know, gastropub favourite for gin and tonics.
It's not just gastropubs. It's everywhere. It's increasingly everywhere. Yeah.
Increasingly taken over the Schweppes.
It is. It really is. Yeah. And I think the interesting aspect of the story here was that it's getting into the supermarkets as well. So yeah. I mean, it's really going mainstream.
Absolutely. And it's done extraordinarily well. Yeah, it's going to be in Morrison's.
That's not high end.
Yeah, that's what. What do you say?
Sorry, Morrison.
It's going.
I shop at Morrison now.
It's going mainstream. That seems to be a good demonstration of that. So this is actually the story in the consumer sector, isn't it? It's actually you want exposure to these UK stories, because as we've talked about, that's been the driver of the recovery.
Yeah,
ones that you used to want.
Yeah, well, I think this is interesting for another reason, which Mark Robinson, who wrote about this when it newly came to market, he said shares are expensive, but this one's going to get taken out at some point.
Right,
and yeah, I think that's a very absolutely. Good call. I think that's a very good call. I can see that happening.
Yeah, and absolutely, because these companies are so desperate for growth.
Yeah, you know. And that is growing extremely quickly, and. Yeah, has a product that crosses borders. Fantastic.
So okay. even on 39 times earnings,
we're
bullish. So.
We are. Yeah. We are. And it's a very nice gin tonic. That was the most important part of that conversation.
Freudian slip there.
Okay. What else we got?
Well, we've also seen banks, of course. We've had all of the challenger banks, Virgin Money, Shawbrook, both doing extremely well. The Provi. We have all of those on a buy. Our banking guy, Ian Smith, is very keen on the kind of alternative lender category. Again, that's a great play on the consumer economy.
Yeah.
As long as the interest rate cycle remains benign, it's hard to see that story going wrong.
Yeah, I think on the consumer side, Seagrove is a play on that, tapping into the e-commerce economy. That's doing well.
Actually, there's a very nice little play on the e-commerce story.
Clipper Logistics?
Yeah, Clipper Logistics.
Yeah.
Exactly. Interesting little company, listed last year. Readers probably don't know much about it, but it has this e-fulfillment business, which is going great guns and is a great way to buy into e-commerce story without having to buy one of the retailers, which are, you know, in a way actually suffering from e-commerce rather than benefiting
absolutely.
From it.
So. Broadcasters, we had Sky looking good as per usual.
Mm-hmm, BT Today, but that won't be in this week's magazine.
And then ITV. Talking of bid targets, we wrote a feature a few years back, suggesting that this wave of M&A was on the way. We called it a couple of years too, hadn't we? But it's here now. But you know, we all had to pick one, and I picked ITV. And you know, I'm amazed that this is still a standalone company because it exhibits everything you would want in a takeover target, and is doing amazingly well. But there you go. Okay, so let's call it a day on the results front, otherwise we'll be here for the rest of the night. So thank you very much, everybody, for your contributions today. Just to run through what else we've got in the magazine, stock screens as per usual. Algie Hall has taken a contrarian approach this week. This is a storming screen. In the past, it's beat the market threefold over the past 4 years, which is fantastic. Mark Robinson is asking whether copper has hit the bottom. That, along with many other metals, has had a torrid time and dragged companies down with it. Including the likes of Antofagasta, and not necessarily a pleasant conclusion there. Potentially still more pain ahead for copper, given its exposure to the Chinese economy as well. Read that to understand why. Fun stuff, personal finance stuff, lots of interesting content there. Rosie Carr, my deputy editor, is talking about wills and why they're so important and how you make them. And lots of other stuff there, which you will talk about on your podcast tomorrow. Results with a few tips as well thrown in for good measure. Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Graham and Dom over there. I'll see you all again next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.